welcome back. Michael Tesarian is back on the program tonight for another conversation. On Once Before, got a lot of very positive email, very intriguing, extremely well-researched and knowledgeable individual. He was born in Ireland. Tesarian is spelled T-S-A-R-I-O-N. He is an expert on the occult histories of Ireland and America. He has made the deepest researches into the comparative mythologies of the world and into his own country's ancient and very mysterious Celtic traditions. His presentations on Atlantis, Lemuria, and the pre-Diluvian epoch have been acclaimed by veterans in the field of paranormal research as well. He's the author of Atlantis, Alien Visitation, and Genetic Manipulation. And Michael considers the consequences to civilization of extraterrestrial involvement and seeks to clarify many of the quandaries that other visitation experts have overlooked. In his forthcoming book, Michael Tesarian's research carries onward through time to show how, after the Great Earth Cataclysms, the Atlanteans and the Lemurians settled on new lands. Primarily, Ireland became a new homeland to those powerful magi known as the Druids, who brought with them the great scientific and spiritual secrets which the whole world would benefit from. The role of the Druids has been consciously obscured by official historians and religious cabals ever since. The time has come now for this all to change, says Michael, and those who have laid claim to the civilizations are imposters in the true sense of that word. It is time for the Irish origins of civilization to come to light. So let us shine some light there. Welcome back, Michael.
Yes, Jeff, it's lovely to be back with you. Again, on your wonderful, wonderful show. Thank you so much for having me on.
Well, thank you. Now, a lot of people are saying, come on, Jeff, what are you doing? Ireland, the cradle of civilization, as we know it today? I don't think so. But don't go away, folks. This is a man not to be brushed off lightly. This is going to be very interesting. I guarantee it. When will the book be ready, by the way?
Probably next year. I'm not in any hurry because I'm still working a lot on the Atlantis. The original book, The Atlantis, Alien Visitation and Genetic Manipulation. I've got a series of DVDs, six in all, that will be coming out, producing that series. There'll be a long-awaited accompaniment to the book on a DVD. So those are actually a priority. But this subject that we're talking about tonight, the Irish origins of civilization, is something that I have been interested in, you know, since my time in Ireland, especially since about 13, when I came across the work of Jim Fitzpatrick and some of the individuals in Ireland who were trying their best in their own way to revive this message. I mean, it actually turns out that it was 1873, and it was a woman, a female author, who had first delved into this subject. Her name was Anna Wilkes.
Mm-hmm.
And then it was followed up at the turn of the century, that's between the 19th and the 20th century,
right,
by a great American master that everyone in America must know about. I mean, there's been so much suppression that even some of the great leading lights of this country, as far as authorship goes, are unknown to the masses of people. And I find that, even as a foreigner and a visitor to your shores, I find that personally unacceptable, you know. And Conor McDarry was his name. So Conor McDarry was in the same maverick research revisionist field as was Emmanuel Velikovsky and Commons Beaumont, you know, and people like that.
Interesting company.
Yeah, I'm just following on in their footsteps.
I think what we need to do also, just a brief aside here, the word revisionism has, of course, been smeared and discredited by a lot of special interest groups for a number of years now. We might want to come up with a new word and call it factualism.
I like that a lot because, of course, that's what we are talking about. We're talking about reality.
Correct.
You know, especially in regards to history. This is what this is where one of the biggest controls from the establishment has been, is with the subject of history, and many even writers of great fame have said that. Rousseau, Voltaire, they've spoken about that if a man can be removed from his roots, from his culture, and it doesn't matter if you're Irish or you're Jewish or you're, you know, Russian or whatever, if you have been, for any reason, natural or otherwise, removed from your culture, from your roots, then you are in big trouble existentially, and you leave yourself wide open to manipulation. This tidal wave of manipulation that tries to do that, you know, is very evident in Ireland. You see, in America, people are still pretty much asleep, and they don't know that it's happening here, because one of the reasons is the place is a big country. It's a huge continent.
When you say removing someone from his or her roots, what you're talking about is extracting the nationalism and national pride from that individual and his family history. The whole idea, of course, in subverting the United States is predicated upon destroying nationalism and American pride in this country.
And more than that, it is, as you know, it is also to then replace that, because you don't leave a void.
Right.
Yeah, what you remove, you have to then replace.
They're more than ready to replace it.
Right, with all sorts of liberalistic ideas and with consensus trance and with this political correctness and just with pure ignorance.
Now that's the New World Order.
Yeah, and it's very much in evidence, and my work is to expose its darker corners, because there's a lot of wonderful people in this country and in the world who have been doing this, but I find sometimes that, you know, they're painting with too thin a brush. This is an incredible mechanism or engine of deception that's been going on, and we need to look into the history, we need to look into religion, we need to look into the racial movement of tribes, because we've been sold a bill of goods. My job, for instance, when I critique religion, is not to invade the private space. Let's get that very clear. I am not a person who's invading the private space of the private worship. My trouble is with these, you know, establishments, these institutions of religion that have inserted themselves and their, what I consider, demonic Luciferian concepts in between the individual and their spiritual power.
Right, and they're also massive commercial enterprises as well. They're corporations. Religion Incorporated, and we get into trouble also when one religion begins to claim it is superior to another, and that's been the case throughout recorded history. We also, of course, are living in very, as you and I found out recently, I'm used to it, maybe you're not, but very dangerous and treacherous times of slander, libel, character assassination, impersonation. There are probably thousands of people working full-time or part-time on the internet now to disrupt, to cause friction,
no,
to start fights and all the rest of it, to thwart anyone who is seeking to shine the light on reality. And that's a full-time enterprise by the enemies of our Constitution and the Bill of Rights.
And they're specifically after those individuals who have not just a sort of a hit-and-a-miss type of accuracy when it comes to these revisionist subjects. They want the creme de la creme. You know, I look at you as being one of the people in America who has that, you know, pedigree, and therefore they're deeply worried about that. So if they can cut you back, and if they can molest you and degrade your character, that's what they're going to do. They know that the rank and the file, they come and they go. But the individual who has personal integrity, personal morality, and also has a sort of a checklist of who they talk about and who they have on, and they are it's accredited, and it's dedicated. It's dedicated to great concepts like freedom and morality. My God, that is a major, you know, plank in their eye, and they can't stand that one bit.
Right. Well, it's very well said. Thank you. I'm like you, doing my best, and like so many others, to bring forth reality. And we have to keep in mind that honest patriots in this country, honest American patriots, will not disparage, degrade, and mutilate each other. It won't happen.
No.
They realize they're on the same bus, same train, same plane, going to the same location, and that is reality. They're just sitting in different seats, but you don't turn and start fighting with someone next to you. It's absurd. So those who launch wars and cause fights, wars, and other kinds of friction are clearly working against the better interests of Americans.
And if they can't throw boulders, they'll throw dust.
That's right.
You know, whatever works. I mean, it's unbelievable how this adversarial energy works. It's, you know, you'd think that they go away when you've proven yourself immune a dozen times or 100,000 times, but hell no. They'd even throw dust in your way if it thought it would get you off your track for a moment, you know. It's incessant.
All too true. All right. Now, for those who are wondering, what kind of a name is Tsarion? Let's have Michael, he did the last time he was here, Tsarion. That doesn't sound like your average Irish name.
No, it's my mother was from the Himalayas, so as far as I know, that comes from their side. And them being a matriarchy, when my mother and father split up, then, you know, I just went back to that name.
That's a great name.
Yeah, it seemed to fit, you know, never thought of it. But that's where I think it's from. It's actually from the northern Himalayas. There's a city or a town up in Tibet that has that name or similar terminology to it, you know.
Interesting parents you must have had.
See, I think that a lot of my researches were born out of this, because there's an age-old controversy and great scholarship has gone into these connections between the Hindu religion, sure, or the Brahmins, you see, and even from a racial point of view, who were the Indo-Europeans, was there an Aryan invasion? There's question marks about that. And what is the connection with the Celts? And these migrations, they've always been fascinating to me. And of course, growing up in Ireland, I was very concerned, it was very apparent to me that there was this diffusionism, that symbols that we find in New Zealand or in the Viking countries of Scandinavia, you see in Mexico, in North America, there's a commonality here. And this is very evident when you live in a Celtic country and these megalithic ruins and these ancient temples are there, and you can go and you can see it. You're literally tripping over them. I mean, in my work, I describe Ireland as a temple without walls.
Wow, fascinating. We'll get into this much more in depth now in just a couple minutes with Michael Tesarian as we continue. Glad you're along tonight. Don't go away. Okay, and we're back talking with Michael Tesarian. All right, Michael, lead the way. Let's go on a little trip through Ireland, truly an amazing country, no matter how you look at it.
Well, it's a very ancient culture. Scholars know that it's the oldest culture in Europe.
Scholars know, but most people don't. Now, that's right then and there, an amazing and rather auspicious beginning to a conversation. The oldest culture in all of Europe,
oh,
Ireland?
Yeah. That's absolutely irrefutable. Not only that, but it was, even from a Christian point of view, if you're within the Christian milieu, then it is quite absolutely known that it was the country of Ireland and the monks in Ireland that preserved Christianity during the Dark Ages, so that then when that Enlightenment came back, it was the Book of Kells and some of these illuminated manuscripts and the cult of monastic, the monks in Ireland had preserved this heritage even from the Christian point of view. So this is well known to clerics.
Fascinating. Well, they may be called to service again soon, because things are not looking too good. They may have to preserve what's left of this before we slip into the next Dark Ages.
Right, and my work is very much cognizant of that. The role of Ireland cannot be downplayed. The trouble that has been going on there, the incessant violence, the genocide, exactly the same genocide as you have in this country with your Native American Indians, has happened millennia ago to the Irish in successive waves. Hmm. In my work, I believe that the famine, which, by the way, has never happened before and never happened since, I believe that that was a planned genocide, that it was the fungus that infected the potato.
I read that somewhere, and whoever presented that argument made a lot of sense.
This is coming to light now. William Bramley in his book Gods of Eden talked
about. That's where I saw it.
Sure, yeah. He's very much, and there's other scholars who are now looking into this, because it stands out like a sore thumb. It was the desecration, the basically extermination of an entire race. But long before the potato famine, we have the Roman invasion. And do you know that the true story of what the Romans did, I mean, Julius Caesar fought the Britons and the Gaels and the Celts for 10 years in bloody battle. Horrific genocide took place there, because the Romans wanted to obliterate once and for all, completely exterminate the Druids. Otherwise, Christianity, as we know it, could not have risen today, because Christianity is nothing but the plagiarization and the plunder of Celtic Druidism, which was the prototype of Christianity that existed before. Druidism is the father, or the seedbed of where Christianity grows. But the attacks, the violence that has been done on that country is incredible, not just from the British, which we all know about, but there's been several waves of this. When St. Patrick himself arrived back in Ireland, he was barely there a year, and already he saw to it that hundreds of books of the Druids were completely destroyed in exactly the same way as Zamoraga and these characters did in South America. So just by looking at those minor details, without even getting into the whole subject of the desecration, we find that who is it who must be the lovers of knowledge in this game? Those who burn books and desecrate whole countries, you know, or these more earlier ancestors of ours who compiled this wisdom? There, you know, it's well known to Irish and British historians that the penal laws, different countries like Australia have had these penal laws. The penal laws of Ireland are so severe, Jeff, that even the researchers in it, in criminality and criminal law, cannot even fathom it. Because we've heard about, you know, in the time of even Robin Hood and the Norman invasion and the certain restrictions that they would have over people. This was tame compared to the penal laws that were imposed upon the Irish people. People couldn't even pick up sticks on the Lord's land to, you know, build a fire in their own home. They could have their arms and their hands cut off for that.
This horrible living situation, if you will, was imposed upon the Irish by whom? Successive conquerors?
Successive groups, yeah. First, like the Romans, and then you, as you move on, then the British crown was used. But the British crown were not just doing this of their own accord. They were controlled by Vatican. They've been controlled by Rome. First of all, the English kings were sort of sympathetic to Ireland. It wasn't always a conflictual situation there. It was during Henry II, I think, in which the Vatican moved in and made it so that these lieutenants, that the royal families of England would become their lieutenants in order to suppress the Solar Stellar Church. The ancient Stellar Church of Ireland had to be eradicated because, of course, it was filled with the symbolism the Christians are using. The Judaic Christian system could not exist if everyone knew that the Druidic system, the Celtic system, you know, had the 12 disciples and the 12 loaves and all the idioms and customs that we associate with Christianity. Well, you couldn't have that thriving in little Ireland and then have your monopolistic religion, you know, working as you would want it. So the whole campaign there was to suppress Celtic Druidism in different successive waves. People today, tourists, they're forever going to Ireland and looking at these quaint cottages and saying, oh, look at the beautiful cottages and how, you know, the windows are so small and the doors are so quaint. What they don't realize, unfortunately, is that the reason why those windows were so small is that the British government taxed the air on the Irish.
Hard to believe.
Can you imagine such insanity which has existed on this planet? They taxed the air so that if you had your windows were too big, you'd be taxed to death. You couldn't even feed your children. This is what we're talking about here.
In summation, what the Irish did was nothing more than follow their codes of ethics and beliefs and morals, and as a people, because of the Druids, they were marked for extermination.
The Druids were, in their own history, and even in commentary from the Roman historians, it is quite clear if you really read into it, and if people have read my first book, Atlantis, they'll know what I'm talking about, that, you see, just even you've heard of the Luck of the Irish, right?
Sure.
This concept of the Luck of the Irish, or the fact that Ireland and England were called the Blessed Isles or the Fortunate Isles, these names were given to it because these were the countries, the land masses that existed, that remained after the massive upheavals and pole shifts and floods that we had on this planet that people like Graham Hancock now are absolutely confirming existed. Top scientists in Oxford and Cambridge have proven this. Alan and Dallaire in their book, When the Earth Nearly Died, the science is absolutely in for what the great mavericks like Velikovsky and Beaumont have been saying. Now, Ireland and England, you see, in fact, the Celts, they talk about four great continents of old that they came from. And they came to Ireland, that was their new homeland. So what we're talking about here when we're talking about the Druids is the old Atlanteans and Lemurians, the remnant with all of that super technology and all that incredible knowledge and wisdom, connection to flora and fauna, that got reseeded on the land that we know today as Ireland, in what we know as Albion.
Okay.
That's where the Arthurian legends and all of this history
Stand by right there, Michael. We'll come back and pick that up. Fascinating. Be right back in a minute. Okay, we're back with Michael Tesarian, talking about Ireland. What about the Druids? A lot of people don't know much about them, what they did, who they were. They were certainly a group of people, a name, in fact, which has been discredited, smeared, obscured, obfuscated for a long, long time. People in robes and hoods doing unholy things and dirty, unclean things. That's what most people think of when they think of Druids. They don't understand. So tell us a little bit about the Druids. And they did, by the way, not restrict themselves to Ireland. They certainly were represented elsewhere as well.
Oh, absolutely. This is one of the most important things to grasp because, yes, you're right. When people think of the Druids at all, they're always focusing on Ireland itself as if that was the only place. And, of course, they may say, oh, well, they may have got to Spain and France and so forth. But the real understanding that these individuals... another name for the Irish, one of the names that they referred to call them themselves, was Phoenician.
Oh,
now
really?
Now that is not with PH.
Uh-huh.
Because remember, the people that I'm telling you about that have obscured all of this have done wonders with translating and faking and putting letters where they don't belong.
Right.
But the word with an F, F-E-N, Phoenician, or the Fenians, these were also one of the names for the Irish people. So that turns out later on to be the Phoenicians, the famous Phoenicians that, you know, were the great power in the Middle East out there.
And mariners, yeah.
Yeah, and the great traders. So, you know, we have the presence of these individuals that you're talking about, the Druids. Now, the word Druid is interesting. It comes from Druthin, Druthin, D-R-U-T-H-I-N. And that word meant the servant of truth, the servant of truth. So, and the motto... The motto that the Druids used was, in fact, truth against the world. So I'm thinking Jeff Rentz will love this one. Truth against the world, the Druidic motto.
Pretty good statement.
Isn't it?
Yes.
In fact, the D, down through when the word became anglicized, D's became T's, so it became Truthin. So instead of Druthin, it was Truthin. That's where we get our word truth. The word Druid is the origin of the word truth.
Oh, fascinating.
Yeah, and their motto was to be a servant of truth. And in fact, every ancient historian that you can think of, you know, all of the great, even Caesar, Julius Caesar, who was a historian, or Cicero, or Pliny, or Tacitus, all of these ancient historians from Rome and from the rest of the world absolutely report and agree that these people were literate, they had their own parliament, they were highly, highly sophisticated in celestial observation, they were astronomers, we know that today. You only have to go and look at the monuments that I was talking about earlier in Ireland that are still tremendously, you know, aligned to the constellations.
Oh, the stone circles all over the place.
Yeah, that's what I was looking for, the word stone circle. Now, the head of the Druids was called an Olam, O-L-L-A-M, or often an Ola. And we get the word oligarchy from this word.
Oh, another fascinating
word. Yeah, originally the word Ola meant the high ones. And it meant high because they were literally studiers of the sky, of the heavens.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. It's a fascinating, you know, people. I mean, these were individuals who did not permit themselves the luxury of cutting a single living thing with a sharpened edge.
Really?
Absolutely. They were the first solar cult. They were stellar worshippers. They had tremendous knowledge of the flora and the fauna.
Most people, excuse me, would associate animal sacrifice, maybe human sacrifice, with Druids, which have, of course, been folded into our entire history and cosmology of darkness and all the rest of it.
We have literally had not just 2,000 years of disinformation and mind control going on. We have had about 11,000 years of it, if you want my opinion, and I can prove that.
All the way back to Atlantis.
Yes, but even if people find that, you know, difficult to accept or whatever, and I understand that because, you know, without doing the homework, a lot of this is something that maybe, you know, does come as a shock to people. But so then let's start very simply. Everyone will agree that there are certain taboo areas that we are mind-controlled in that we must not approach, these controversial areas. And there are basically three that involve, you know, people like ourselves. We're told never to look to prehistory because they're just going to tell you that the dawn of time was between 7 and 10,000 years ago. And even though that has been shot to pieces by academics of the highest level and even mavericks like Graham Hancock and others, we are still, the consensus is you do not look past to the pre-flood times.
Right.
Then the next taboo thing is you never question religion.
Oh, no.
And that's a basic. We don't even need to discuss that.
Right.
And the next one is this. And this is what this whole show is about and what my work is about. The third taboo that I think is very important is that we are told to never look to civilization spreading from west to east. It's always the reverse. If there's a thing called civilization, then we are told, without a single shred of scientific proof, I might add, that it moved from the eastern lands, from Asia Minor, from even Egypt, which was a wonderful high culture, I'm not denying that, But the whole idea is that from these desert plains of nothingness out in the Middle East, all the civilization through the 12 tribes and all this other malarkey is meant to have, you know, crossed into Europe and civilized all these barbarians.
Amazing.
Yeah, it's true.
It's utter nonsense.
An immutable fact, and
it's people just, it's almost genetic, really, east to west. You just used another Druid word, didn't you? Malarkey?
I guess that slipped out, you see.
See? By the way, for those of you who do study history and have studied Caesar actually wrote about the Druids.
Yeah.
And I was just able to find a quote I saw some time ago. Caesar wrote that the Druids, and this is a quote now from his actual writings, know much about the stars and celestial motions, and about the size of the earth and the universe, and about the essential nature of things, and about the powers and the authority of the immortal gods, and these things they teach to their pupils.
Yeah.
End quote. They also, the Druids, taught the traditional doctrine of the soul's immortality.
Look at that. You know, they held, there's two...
And also about reincarnation.
That's right.
They had it all.
But they taught two things. One, that there is a, like you just read there, that the soul is immortal. Caesar wrote it himself. He said that when he got there, and they looked at this, and they studied it, and the Romans were literate as well, so they could fully understand this. There was no confusion at all. The Druids taught about the immortality of the soul, and the second thing that they taught was that you arrive at, you know, your paradise, or you arrive at your reward after a life of integrity, ethics, and purity. Now, anybody... Bring in a Christian cleric and a rabbi, and what will they say? They will say that Judaism is based on what I just said. Judaism is fundamentally based not on the belief of a Jesus Christ, you know, from sort of like a supernatural being or whatever. They say that Judaism is fundamentally based on a moral, pure life of following the Torah, of being disciplined and living a moral life. You bring in a Christian, and they will say our Christianity is based on the belief in Jesus and also the immortality of the soul. It's in Druidism. It came from there. The very foundation, even in Caesar's statement, gives you that any neutral party who's open-minded can see that the seeds of the two greatest religions in the world are right there.
And you're going back thousands of years,
thousands,
not just 2,000.
The Irish, this whole concept was known in India. The Indians referred to the Britons, and when I say Britons, I mean B-R-I-T-O-N-S, Britons, which included the Irish. The Indians knew that country as the they called it the Britishtan, and it was Britishtan in Hindi meant the seat of religion, where the wise ones are.
Another amazing origin of a word. All right, stand by. We'll pause and come right back with the remarkable Michael Tsarsarian in just a couple minutes. Lots to think about. Okay, and we're back with Michael Tsarsarian. How about some more words? I love the word origin game. That's fascinating.
Mm-hmm.
You've given us oligarch. You've given us the word truth. Those are pretty impressive words to come from ancient Druidism.
The capital of Ireland was Tara. This is a word that has, you know, fascinated people for years.
Spelled?
T-A-R-A.
Oh, yes.
And that turns up as Abraham's father, as Terah, T-E-R-A-H. And for those who don't know, there's a consideration now that Abraham, in fact, and his father Terah were visiting from Ireland, that they were high druids. I know this sounds unusual, but this is the kind of stuff that's been hidden from the human race. It's not my business to throw out, you know, information that cannot be thoroughly backed up in a scholastic way.
Right.
You know, we have this kind of information out there. We have to understand also that words, as Conor McDarry and these great people who start looking into this, one of the reasons why they found out it was so easy to obscure the Druidic role was not only, of course, through this genocide I've been speaking of, but because of the manipulation of letters and words and language, so that the parent language, which originally was Gaelic. Did you know that the Japanese language, the Ainu language, and that Sanskrit, the closest derivatives that they have is to Gaelic?
No.
Yeah. The Japanese Ainu language, its closest, its closest sister language is Gaelic. And it's even thought by those who've really researched this, that Gaelic was in fact a parent language of all the other languages of the world. This can, again, is irrefutable
wow.
to those who know. Yeah,
wow, that's pretty amazing.
But unfortunately, Jeff, the Gaelic tradition, the Druidic tradition was mostly an oral one. Those who studied a little bit of this know that the Druids tended to communicate orally, and also through music, and through ballads, and through poems. And this, unfortunately, was not one of the other reasons, you see, why it was so easy later on to obscure. They didn't write anything down. So they were a culture that was quite easy, after all said and done, to obscure and to annihilate.
Yeah. Too bad.
But to plunder. This is not
they were too.
Work.
They were too enlightened, too wise,
right.
And they couldn't protect themselves.
But the most important thing to remember, though, is that it wasn't just an annihilation in the sense that you take something from somebody and then you immediately destroy it. What happened here, why we're still talking about this thousands of years later, is because this canon, this archive, these treasures, were appropriated. It's like squatters living in the mansion. But you don't say that the squatter is the owner of the mansion. We might find individuals now draped, as we do, in the regalia and the symbolism, the clothes that are even worn by the Pope, all of the costumes that you see being used by clerics of both Judaism and Christianity have Druidic origins. Did you know that the original names of the 12 tribes of Israel are Gaelic names? Did you know that the descendants of Noah, that's Ham and Shem and Japheth, these terms are Gaelic terms?
No, nobody knows this.
Irrefutably. And all of their descendants, this is not just hot air, this is absolutely proven. But the problem is that the works of Anna Wilkes, the works of the great American scholar Connor McDary, of L.A. Waddell, of Emmanuel Velikovsky, of Collins Beaumont, of all the list of the individuals who did their best to expose this in previous centuries, their work is exceedingly rare now. My job has been to try and bring it back to a modern time. Why? Because I believe, as you have said on your show many times, we are living now in a time of truth. There is resistance, yes, but there's other needs within the subconscious of people. There's other things happening in the world where truth is going to rise again and not be crushed to the earth. And part of this truth is our origin. The Scots-Irish tradition, for instance, is extremely important in an American context, not just in a modern way, but as your great American scholar Barry Fell showed, that he believed that the Anasazi Indians of this country, the people mm-hmm. who were put before us, you know, those mm-hmm. great builders in New Mexico right. of these amazing right. things, they're Celtic. I work with Glenn Kimball, the great archaeologist, who has dug out the Ohio Serpent. He's bringing me photographs, and he's saying, can you please identify these, Michael, as Celtic? Because that's what we think they are. I'm going, absolutely, these are Celtic. Get your other experts onto it. There's nothing Native American Indian about these, and the American Indians have never denied it. You go to the Cherokee and you go to these Indians, they're always telling you that these were the white foreigners from across the seas.
Right.
They're absolutely not our things.
Right.
What's happened, America? Wake up.
Glenn has talked about that in years gone by on the program. He and others have done some amazing research.
Isn't it?
Some of the archaeological finds from cultures across the Atlantic, up the Mississippi, and I guess the Missouri River.
All over.
All over. There are literally hundreds upon hundreds of known sites, and maybe thousands altogether, where these relics are available and have been found. But, of course, they're broomed away by modern archaeology who doesn't want to deal with it.
History Channel and Discovery Channel are going to tell you that is Anastasi's. I'm sorry, it's a big mystery. We have no idea who built this. They just came, and they just disappeared into thin air. They don't look like Native American Indian sites. The local Native American Indians go, hey, bud, we didn't do it. We'll tell you who did, but we don't listen to them.
No, I know.
We have a situation that also was perpetrated by the Vatican, and it's well known. And it was the flat world concept. If people want to know why there was actually this flat world concept that they believed if you sailed too far, you know, especially to the west, you'd fall off the edge, that was a purposeful design, by the way, that mm-hmm. the Vatican created so that people would not, of their own accord, you see, fund treks out to the west, so that they might go to Ireland and find out what had happened.
Right. Ruled by fear. It's always fear-based, isn't it?
Yeah. So people believed that the land beyond Europe was this brooding, you see, devilish, smoky, misty place, And Ireland and England's history was off the map. Nobody even wrote about the history of those lands until so late in the day.
Mm-hmm.
And the only reason why the Vatican and the Catholic Church got behind migrations and travel to Americas is because people were doing it of their own accord. Independent merchant class people were funding ships, so they thought we better get behind it, otherwise others are going to get there first. And that's the reason why Columbus was funded. Prior to the time of Columbus, it was considered taboo, completely off limits, to get into a ship and travel to the west, because there was such pathological fear that Ireland, Albion, Avalon, all of this mythical information of the Welsh and the Druids of Ireland, it was taboo. They hoped that this would never be discovered. They hoped that this corpse would be buried forever. And exactly what we have to understand is that the annihilation of the Irish Druids was the first crime that we can lay at the door of Roman Catholicism, and I'm talking about the institution here, not the religion, of the Vatican. This is a merciless, ruthless. We're not just talking about missionaries going out there and doing what they did. We're talking about the wholesale genocide, and it is the first of its kind.
It's also interesting to note how fear restrains and how greed propels the advance of so-called civilization.
Now, and you know something, Jeff? It's like I say in my work a lot. These individuals that are what we call the establishment or the Illuminati or the power brokers, whatever you want to call them,
mm-hmm.
and there are many terms for them, yes, they are deeply in fear. But the problem for the human race is that these individuals have combined their fear with occult knowledge.
Correct.
And this is what makes them lethal in the extreme. Therefore, why do I refer to my work as occult? Why do I talk about occult histories of the world? Because since our rival has combined his fear with occult knowledge, it is behoven to us now to know about occult or hidden things. We just can't walk around there, you know, blind. We have to now inform ourselves as to what has been hidden from us so that we are armed up and able to understand how deeply this tyranny against the human race goes.
And how little we know about our true history.
Well, it's true, but there's people like yourself and myself that are out there dedicated to bringing this knowledge to people, and I'm bulletproof.
I know you've done some amazing things, Michael, and you are tough as nails, no question.
That was living on the streets of Ireland. I not only had a first-class introduction as to how this game works, I was introduced to my destiny as to what to do about it. Because remember, in this world, as they say, freedom is never free, and silence is most definitely consent.
By our silence, we allow.
I agree. Absolutely agree. And the time has come to speak up. The time has come to love the word now. The word no. You know, I talk about that in my work. People have to love. We should fall in love with the word no. Be a rebel. Get up there and say no to these authorities and these individuals. Love the beauty and the power of that word, and you'll see amazing change in your life.
Here we are in an entire culture now in the United States where kids are being taught that no means, well, you're supposed to ask why.
Yeah.
No means no.
Mm-hmm.
Not anymore, though.
Yeah.
Kids now, it's just an invitation for them to argue. Well, why not?
Mm-hmm.
Why? What did I do? Well,
that's
I didn't
right.
do that. He did that. She did that. They did that. It's not my fault. So no is something simply to be walked around. But you are 100% correct.
Well, not in my alphabet. I mean, my language.
I hear you.
That's the word of. See, no is the rebel. No, that simple two-letter word is the insignia of the spirit of rebellion. That spirit of rebellion is in a Christ-like person. It is in a Martin Luther King. It is in a, you know, Che Guevara. It's in anyone who stands up to the authority and says no, that causes change. We have become so tame that this fearful oligarchy, this plutocracy, who are shivering, they actually fear the human race like nobody's business, has been able to come into our streets and completely take over our life without a single shred of legal or sovereign right to do that. I keep saying to my audiences all the time, these forces of government and religion and politics do not come in and take over your power. You give it away to them. There is all the difference in the world between the two concepts.
Well, people forgot how to say no. You're right.
Yeah. Well, the time, you know, I believe very much that it's either do or die right now. The time is coming where you have to do that. We're going to have to, again, fall in love with that word, realize that, you know, there are these forces, they fear us, and they fear knowledge, but it's not going to be, they're not going to win. The force that they're fighting is an eternal force, and we just have to have complete and utter confidence in that. This is what the Tolkien's Lord of the Rings, which was recently made into a fantastic series of movies, this is what it shows, that even the smallest, most insignificant person can absolutely turn the tide. But it means first that that individual may have to go on a journey into the darkness, the darkness of themselves, the darkness of the world, before they can absolutely conquer evil. Because all the armies of the world may not be able to do it, and in fact, all the armies of the world cannot do it. The army is one, and it is individuals having the bravery and courage to look at the darkness, not edit it out, and then say, "Hey, I want to live a beautiful, peaceful, harmonious life." Which, when most people say that, especially those in the New Age movement, what they mean is, "Oh, I just want to edit out all the ugliness so that I don't see it."
It is truly a withdrawal. You're right.
It's an escape of the worst kind.
Right.
No, the holistic person sees all the darkness and the light, the yin and the yang, and moves from there.
Very good. Very well said, Michael. Stand by. We'll take our top of the hour break and come right back with more with Michael Tsarian.